If, you know, you're living in Tucson, Duluth, Cincinnati, you know, one of those benighted places, and you want to move someplace really nice, like L.A. Yeah. We have a barbecue every once in a while. We do the town. If you want to do that, that can be a goal. I want to get out of this place. I want to get out of this job. And I want to live where I want to live. And it can be wherever it is. If they have racing. And that's probably 70-80% of the country. And so you take that goal and focus on it. Now, here's why the goal is really important. Because right now, you're here. And your goal is over here. And now, for the first time, I hope you see that there is a distance between where you are and where you want to be. But there is also a path where you are and where you want to be. See, if you don't have a goal, you don't have really any reason to improve or to change, because you're floating in your little inner tube and you're happy. And that's great. I've always envied people who are happy in whatever it is that they're doing, however it is that they're doing. Those people have my complete envy. The ones that I really, really think have it made are the ones that when they were 4 years old decided they wanted, I'm going to be an astrophysicist. And they grow up and they become astrophysicists and they're happy as clams. They get to play at work every day. I never have found anything like that. I wish I had. Horse racing's pretty close, but it's still not an all-consuming passion. But if you have a goal in your life that's important to you, and you should think, I mean, your goal shouldn't be, I want to earn $40,000. Think of a little more. Think of a little deeper than that. Why do you want to earn $40,000? I want to quit my job. Huh? Now we have a serious goal. Quitting my job was my goal for a long time. Oh my, from like, oh, say the third day I started. I was there 16 years. Yeah, that was a big goal. I just did not, you know. I had to get up every morning at 6 a.m. You think I was, oh, Mr. Grouch Bear. By Friday, look out. I didn't like that, but I did it. Year after year after year, because I couldn't think of anything else to do. And because I didn't really have a plan to get out. I didn't have a goal. Finally, the company gave me a goal. They canned me. My wife and sister, no, 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 tell them they laid you off. Yeah. They canned me, get out of here, laid off. They canned the whole division at the same time. All right. Anyway, I suddenly focused on a goal. My wife said, well, you've always wanted to be a writer, and you're getting pretty good at the track. Why don't you take 6 months? Well, you got the unemployment benefits and all that severance package and all. See if you can do it. Which surprised the hell out of me. I didn't think she'd go for that. But I did it. And suddenly I had a goal. The goal was not going back to work. A very intense, very serious goal. I mean, you know, some people love their job. This gentleman here, Tom Brohammer in the back of the room, you know. He went to the phone company every day and they had a little party. They go down and switch the circuits in the basement. Oh, there's a call that's not going to do it. They had a ball at work, you know. He put in 3-4 hours a week of actual honest labor, and the rest of the time, yay. I can understand not wanting to give up a job like that. But I had to work. It was hell. You know, sometimes, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours a day. It was, you know. I don't understand why they laid me off either. okay, but I didn't want to go back to this kind of slavery. Because even if you're not working, they expect you, you're butting the chair at least. And you got to look like you're working. Nobody ever works all the time. At least I don't want to meet anyone who does. But you got to have your butt in the chair, and you got to look, you don't get to put your feet up and read the newspaper because the boss might walk by and, you got to goof off with your eyes open and a pen in your hand. But I didn't want to go back to that, so my goal suddenly became very crystal clear. I had to generate, in 6 months' time, enough income from any other source to match approximately my income level on my job. And I looked at this and I said, well, Howard talked about the $200. I got that from writing an article for Gambling Times. So writing was out. writing, for those who are not professionally adept, just starting out, probably is not a paying proposition in 6 months. So that left me with horse racing. So I had, I'd go to the track and I'd make $300-$400 a month, have fun. Now all of a sudden it was time to get serious. And I looked at my income for the last year or so and I said, well, I have a positive expectation here. I just need to discipline my betting. And so I did. I disciplined it, and I made it work, because all of a sudden, I intensely wanted it to work. Not that I didn't want it to work before, not that losses didn't sting before, but I was a weekend player. I go out 2-3 weekends a month, maybe slide out an afternoon once in a while, and that was it. Now it was sort of an everyday thing, and it was the difference between working and not working. I mean, at a job. And so with that goal right there, I looked at all the steps that I had to take to reach that goal. I looked at my current records, and they said, not at this level. Not wasting all that money on exactas, not screwing around the way you do, not making $10 and $15 bets, you don't reach the goal. So I had to do a little self-examination and say, okay, I'm here, I want to be there. What steps can I take to move down this path? Because the thing is, you don't stand here and make a giant leap over here. You like my giant leaps? Yeah, I do too. You don't do that. Or even two steps, no. What you have to do is take baby steps. You're here. And so you take a little step, and you're a little closer. And each step you take, and every once in a while you take a little step back, but you're more or less progressing all the time toward this goal. And I urge you, when you reach that goal, first thing you do, set another one. We're all greedy. Come on, we can always find another goal. And it may not even be in horse racing. You may say, okay, I have achieved my goals in horse racing. I'm making the money I need. I've quit my job. I've supplemented my income to the extent that I need to. Therefore, I'm done with that goal. Now I have a goal of doing something else. Becoming whatever it is that you want to do. Or maybe you decide, well, I want to be an even better horse player. Double my income next year. And so you have another goal. And you say, well, if I want to double my income next year, I better look at what I did last year and do it better. That's the importance of goals. So I hope you all said it. And now let's talk about some of the steps we can take to reach it. I've given a couple money management plans out in doing these talks. And after a while, you start feeling a little futile. The one that I'm going to give you today, I've given to, 1,000 people, some more than once. Some of you 8 or 9 times. You know who you are. And to date, I've heard back from, I think it's 6 now. who have actually done it. And they all say, hey, you know, guess, you'll never guess. It worked. You'll never guess what happened, Mike. It actually worked. And I said, huh, what a surprise. But it does actually work. And so let's start setting up our steps. We're here, and our goal's over there. Now, for how many of you does that goal involve a dollar sign? Most of you? Yeah, it probably should, because let's face it, we're not altruistic in this business, and the real way to keep score is dollars in pocket. You know? A dollar saved is a damn prisoner, right? Absolutely. So you have to have a goal in mind. Are any of you near your goal? I mean, you know, within 50%? Oh, you guys aim for the sky, huh? My goal is to own Western Tennessee. I see. Yeah, 500,000. How many of you got a six-figure goal? Yeah, how many of those with six-figure goals are doing six figures now in some other business? Don't get out of touch here. Every once in a while, some guy who's a plumber's apprentice or a clerk typist or something like that will come to me and say, I'm only making $8,200 a year, but I would like to make about, $250,000 a year at racing. Yeah, so would I, but part of it is you're just not used to handling sums like that. I had an experience right here in this very town over at the Hilton where I had a bankroll sort of explode. I started with 1,000 and in 6 days it reached 11,000. And I was betting a straight percentage. But at when it hit about $7,500, my next bet was supposed to be $750. And I had just made a big score, and I was kind of up and pumped, and without really even thinking about it, I went up and made a $750 bet. And I made a, there was part of it was a Quinella, part of it was a Wynn place on two horses. I didn't hit the board on anything. $750, and it really stopped me because I had to write down minus $750. And saying, yo. that's a week's wages, friends. I just blew that in 8 minutes. It was a stopper, and I'll tell you, I immediately retreated back to a $500 level and less because I was psychologically unprepared to make those huge, big steps. So make your goals kind of realistic, because as you make these little steps, if the goal keeps seeming to recede from you, gets further away, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel just never really appears, it's kind of discouraging. So if you're making, let's say, $2,000 a year in racing, then maybe your goal should be to get up to 5 or 10. And then when you get there, your goal should be, well, I want to make a living at this. And so just approach it in kind of steps. Or you can set goals along the way. Give yourself a little reward, whatever you want to do. There's 1,000 books about this kind of thing, you know. Because all the damn yuppies want you to set goals. I always thought it was kind of dumb. Who needs a goal? Well, until I actually set one, I didn't realize how valuable they can be because they keep you so focused and on track. At least in one area of your life. So let's talk about the things you need to do to get from here to there. What's the big one? When you all want to start tomorrow.
Keeping records.
Yeah, keeping records. There we go. How many of you keep enough records? Yeah, 1, 2, 3 guys, yeah. Some of the old timers, they've heard me. They put up their hands even if they're lying, you know. And I don't want them to pick on me, right? Come on, yeah. So, record keeping is the hallmark of the professional player. I've been to the races with, and I'll drop a few names here for you, Andy Beyer. I've been to the races with Bill Scott. I've been to the races with Mark Kramer, Dick Mitchell. All the biggies, the ones that are writing the books, all the guys from Perco, you know, the best. Oh, and Brohammer. And everyone, the one thing in common that they have, I mean, Andy Beyer is a wild, crazy psychopath. He is a compulsive gambler. He just happens to be a smart compulsive gambler. What is a compulsive gambler who shows a profit? A man with an unusual hobby. Who is perfectly well accepted by society. That's all it takes. The man who goes to the track and loses his paycheck is a bum. The man who goes to the track and doubles his paycheck is a hero and has an unusual hobby. Oh, not Fred, yeah. Yeah, I don't know about him. He goes to the track a lot, but on the other hand, he drives a damn nice car. You know, oh, how does he do it on his paycheck and support that track hobby of his? Well, maybe that's how. Maybe Fred has figured out how to win. So records are the touchstone of professionalism. Now, Tom's records are pretty neat. Other people's are just meticulous. Amazingly enough, Andy's are very meticulous. I've seen his. And Mark Kramer's kind of look, he uses the haystack method. He writes stuff on the back of old gas bills and trainer notes, and he has it in a heap. Used to be on his dining room table, this heap. And then he has stacks of old racing forms in random order in the garage. And but by God, he, you know, you'd ask, well, how is Mike Mitchell going when Pinkai is up? Whoa, he's into the heap. Out comes, you know, an old receipt for a shirt or something. On the back, it's there's the statistic that he wants. He can do it that way. And they're always in between. William Scott is, again, very meticulous. This tends to grind over and over and over a certain set of racing forms. We all have our own way of going, and that's not important. The important thing is to have a set of records that work for you. We've given you record forms till our ears bleed. You never use them. You know who I'm talking to. The ones that are going to start tomorrow. Well, this is supposed to be money management, so I won't talk to you about track profiles and Brohammer models and all the rest of that stuff. But I will talk to you about betting records. You need them. Why do you need them? Because you're here and you want to be there. You have a goal. But if you don't have records, you don't know when you'll get there. If your goal is, let's say, $10,000 a month, and you don't keep records, how will you know when you've reached it? Maybe you only made $9,000. Seems like a lot of money laying around, but you don't know. Maybe you've reached your goal and don't know it. For a lot of people, the goal involves winning. At our seminars last summer, Howard invited everyone with records to come and talk to me on, you know, see what they're doing right and doing wrong. We did that at 3 seminars. 4 people showed up. That's about right. And 2 of them were already winning and didn't know it. We sat down and did an ROI on their win percentage. Oh, 36%, pretty good. Now let's do the ROI on the exactas. Uh-oh, minus 142%. And then I just look at them and say, well, you think we got a problem here? You think we're going to solve this problem? It's amazing. But until you do record keeping, you're floundering. It's like, I've used the analogy of trying to run a shoe store without doing any of the paperwork. So I don't want to do paperwork, I want to sell shoes. But you got to close down once in a while and take inventory. You got to do some tax work. You got to order new shoes when the old ones run out. All of it paperwork. It's not what you got into the shoe business for. You got in there to fondle ladies' feet. Right? Oh, nice nylon. Ooh, seams on the back of your stocking. Ooh, I like it. Come on, ladies. Don't they run their hands up the back of your legs once in a while? I bet they do. I know I would. But that was their goal, to sell shoes. But to meet their goal, they have to do all this other crap that they hate. They live for feet, and here they are, late at night, filling out IRS forms, filling out resale forms for the state, filling out order forms, forms. And there are a lot of people in this world who give up business or never go into business because they don't want to deal with it. They want to show up in the morning, sell those shoes, fondle those feet, and out the door and get a paycheck at the end. Well, we have chosen to go into business for ourselves. Racing is just that. It's a business. It's not your hobby anymore. If you want to keep it at a hobby level, then you can disregard a lot of this. But if you want to take it beyond the hobby level, you have a goal. Well, then, you've got to do some of the unpleasant stuff. Some of the stuff that you don't want to do. Like writing down that bet that wasn't really very well considered and that you lost. Boy, anyone can write down winning bets. It's the losers that are tough to write. Particularly when you know you should have bet on the 4 and the 6, but the 4 looks so good, you bet him alone and the 6 won. And you say, well, I had the horse. He's one of my top two. I always bet two except when I don't. Let's look at this and say, I'll call that a win. But I won't count that. You know, I'll call that a win. I'll just write it down on my bank as though I won. Yeah, try spending the money. Try bullshitting the pari-mutuel machine sometime. Pari-mutuel machines do not care. This is a perfect democracy out there at the track. If you are a man or a woman, short, tall, black, white, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. If you have the right ticket in your hand, they will give you money. If you do not have the right ticket in your hand, you can have a limo parked outside, come to the track in a helicopter, have lots of gophers all around you, you know, lots of power, money, beautiful women, anything that you might think of. And if you've got the wrong ticket in your hand, the man says, what am I supposed to do with this? Get out of here. But if you do, you can be dressed like I'm dressed. I mean, you can go out there and hand them. You can be society's dregs, the outcast of outcasts, and they will pay you money simply by holding the right ticket. Perfect democracy. Haven't you always dreamed of this? You will be rewarded for your efforts completely and absolutely to the extent that your efforts deserve reward. Isn't that what you all expected when you went into the job market? How many of you found it? Here it is. So the first step toward achieving independence in this perfect society at the racetrack is writing down your bets. It's just that simple. A 9-cent notebook. Open it to the first page and write. If you really want to motivate yourself, write your goal. Right up there. Remember, you're not going to share this with anybody. God knows you're not going to show it to the IRS. Probably not your wife, you know. How'd you do today? I broke even. My grandfather played poker for 25 years. He was one hell of a card player, and he broke even every damn night for 25 years. How'd you do, Al? I broke even. Yeah, I'll bet. But some of those nights he was probably down, and some of those nights I'm sure he was up. He taught me to play cards when I was about 10, and he didn't cut me any slack. a lot of people, this is a very private thing, this notebook. You don't have to even tell anyone else it exists, except me. But it's important to have it for your own sanity, because there's going to come a time when you just lost four in a row. And here's the race you've been sitting on, the race you've been waiting for, the race that your records say you should be betting $200, $300, $400 on. And you're scared shitless. You're sitting and you're saying... I'm sorry I offended you, Tommy. Oh, yeah. Phone company guys are like that, you know. You can't say it on the phone. They don't want to hear it. And you all know it's a federal offense to say shitless on the phone, don't you? You're sitting in your seat. You're questioning your ability to handicap. You're questioning, is this my day? What's happening? And then you look back to your record. You say, well, look, I lost four in a row there, and I made a comeback. Here's a 20-race cycle where I lost six. And look, at the bottom, I showed a small profit. It gives you the confidence to go on. Because when you've lost four in a row and you have a prime bet coming up, you have to, as a professional, walk up to the window and pull the trigger. You have to make that bet. Because if you can't do that, forget it. You're just not going to make it. And one of the real confidence builders, one of the reasons that I'm almost overpoweringly cocky sometimes at the races, is because I can look back and say I have a history of success. And that is vitally important. And that is the kind of things that gives you that giant leap halfway across the stage toward your goal. And so I think if you'll take these two steps, and then any other steps that appear logical, perhaps you need to keep some of the other records, the handicapping records. But we're not talking about handicapping up here now. We're talking about money management, what you do after you handicap. If you will focus on that goal and say, okay, here's my tool. My primary tool is a 79-cent spiral round notebook. And all I have to do is write down every bet that I make. Yeah, even the pick six that you split with your buddies for $2, you know, six of them sitting up there way up in the back of the grandstands drinking beer and making rude noises at the lady jockeys. Yeah, you've got to write that one down too. You've got to write them all down. And that's, well, you're probably halfway to your goal the minute you start doing that. And keep doing it. And the real test will be your first losing streak. When things aren't going right, you don't understand the track, something's wrong, you're not sharp, whatever is wrong. You're going to have losing streaks. You all know that. We all admit going in, we say, I'm a 70% player. No one ever comes up, hi, I'm a 30% loser. You didn't hear Bruce up here, hi, I lose 26% of all the races I love. No, he's 74%. You're all, 74. No, but he doesn't brag about the 26, but it's his expectation. The worst thing you can do is try to lose them all. Or lose them all, probably. Although it's a little easier. But winning, you should build that confidence. And looking back over a history of winning play will make you tremendously confident. Now, there's some other things that you might find to get in the way of your goal. How many of you go to the races with your friends? Yeah, most of you. How many have a beer at the racetrack? How many of you, have fun at the races? Well, I got news for you. Racing is not as much fun as it used to be. You have to give up going to the races with your friends. Now, I was lucky in this regard. I didn't have that many friends. And the guy that I went to the races with was Brohammer. He was a snap to give up. So, But it was something that I had to do. I do go to the races with some people. But I'll tell you, one of the criteria that I have for going to the races with people is they don't talk about racing very much. I mean, as we put our binoculars on the starting gate, who you got in here? Huh? I got the four horse. You out of your mind? You know, but that's the level of conversation. We don't discuss endlessly our bets. Tom Hamilton and I spent Thursday afternoon playing Long Acres. And he had his readouts, and I had my readouts. And he had some success, I had some success. But if you put a mic on us, you would have sworn that we were, sitting in our car or someplace, having coffee. We weren't talking about horses or racing. And we gave a little cheer when we won, kicked each other when we lost. Your fault, I lost it. But that's the way it should be. And those are the only circumstances I'll go to the races. Unfortunately, going to the races isn't as much fun as it used to be. Sorry, that's the way it is. But going to work, treat your racing like a job. You don't take your friends to work with you, do you? Sitting there operating the finger-eating machine and you don't have a beer in your hand. Racing has to become a job, because why? That's the way you move from here to here. It goes back to the focus. You want there. And so you have to start asking yourself, am I helping or hurting my cause when I go to the races with my friends who have a whole different goal set, whose idea of the races is to go out, lose a few bucks, and have some fun? There are thousands and millions of people who come to Las Vegas every year with a certain amount of money tucked aside to lose. Why do they come? I don't understand that. I would not go to the racetrack if I had a certain amount of money in my pocket to lose. I'm sorry, that just does not compute. If I come to the Las Vegas, I want to come with a certain amount of money to win. I come over here, I want to win, not lose. And yet 90% of the people in this hotel have a bankroll set aside to lose. And the folks out there are happy to accommodate them. Now the racetrack is a little different. They don't care if you win or lose. But remember, they don't care. So they're not going to make it any easier on you. They're not going to handicap you. Perfect, fair democracy. Okay, money management plan, then I'm going to shut up. Do I have writers and such like, ooh, little erasers? That'll work. Okay, the money management plan that you actually use is not as important as having a plan in the first place. I would rather see you out there with a bad plan than no plan. Because no plan at all is the worst plan you can find. Any other plan is better than that. Even if you come up with something really jackass, like the do column, that's much better than nothing. Because at least you'll get in the habit of writing them down and you'll see, wait a minute, this isn't working out. Let me try something else. You'll have some feedback. You'll get in the habit of writing. And it should happen. So if you don't like my plan, use another plan. Buy one of Dick Mitchell's books. He talks about it. Read Huey Maul, the man who developed almost all of this stuff. Oh, I did promise Mary Sarton I'd introduce her. Hi, Mary. Let's give Mary a round of applause for working so hard back there. She begged me to do that. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, the real brains and power behind Perko. There she is. The driving force. She writes all the programs, too. Do you know that? So pick a plan. a money management plan that appeals to you. It doesn't really matter what it is, because if it's a bad plan, you always have the touchstone of checking it against flat betting. Now, what's your $2 ROI? And that's a number that you should know. Because without knowing that number, you're really kind of at sea. So here's my plan. I've given it out 1,000 times. And it's really very simple. Okay. You start with a $200 bank. Remember that $200 article I told you about? That's where I got it. It was a review of Bill Scott's book, I think. Or maybe one of Mitchell's. I don't remember. Anyway, I sold the review to Gambling Times. $200. Big money. It only took me a week. Hey. You bet 5% of $200 to win only. Yes, that's what I said. No exactas. No daily doubles. No pick threes. No pick sixes. No pick nines. No twin tries. No fun. Win only. And you do that until you double your bank. Now, it doesn't matter if that takes 6 months, 6 weeks, or 6 hours. Bruce Jorgensen doubled his bank in an afternoon. It took me, probably 4 or 5 weeks to double my first bank. Other people may take 6, 8 months. Not a contest. You don't get any prizes for being first. Much, the prize is the doing, not the result. Because let's face it, $200 is chump change. Some guy's sitting out there with a big cigar saying, hey, I tip more than that. Well, listen, if you're good at this game, $200 will turn to $2,000, will turn to $20,000 with breathtaking speed. I went from 1 to 11 in 6 days. On the other hand, if you're not winning, you don't want to start big, right? I mean, if you're going to lose 50% of your bank, why start with $10,000? All these guys who say, you got to have a big bank, are saying that because they expect you to have a long losing streak. And we hope you won't. But we're not talking handicapping here. We will then take a $100 profit from our $400, leaving us with three. We will take that $100 profit and we will give it to our wives. You will if you want to keep peace in the family. Or we will take them out to dinner. Or we will put it in our son's college education fund. Or we'll use it to pay a damn bill. Whatever. It's a really good feeling, guys, to take $100 and say, here, I earned this at the track. Not one of these, I had a big exacta, let's all go out to dinner. Earn that sucker. And use it in a way that helps your life, helps your family, helps reach this goal over here. Now, you got $300 left, you bet 7.5% of bank. Split 60-40 between two horses. I think I left that out. To win only. You must bet two horses. You must bet the full 7.5%. You have only one option, and that is to pass the race. If you are going to bet into the race, you must make the full bet. We have taken freedom of choice out of your hands. And you do that until you double your bank to 600. 7.5. It's not important. If you want to go 5, 6, 7, 8, work up like that. Most people want to get into action a little faster. The percentage doesn't matter. The plan doesn't matter. There's nothing magic about this plan. It's just a plan that works because I did this very plan. I have never added to my racing bankroll. My first racing bankroll was $200. Not my first. My first Sarton method bankroll was $200. I hit a big exacta the last day at Hollywood Park. I had some dough. And I bought a few things, racing things. One of the things that I bought was a certain methodology. soon as I figured it out, about a year later, I said to myself, yeah, you get the yellow manual on a program disc that doesn't work in the mail. You try making money. Them was the good old days. When I figured it out, I had just sold another article, and that was my racing bankroll. It made that bankroll work for me very well. You know? We paid cash for our house and redecorated that sucker. Tore the whole damn front end of it off. I don't have car payments. No debts. Just told my wife, why don't you go halftime? Sure, they cut your salary in half. I'll just go one extra day a week. I know. I'm winding it up. Come on.
John, I'm playing the violin for this part.
Yeah.
We got to get a thing with we can play music behind.
I think we should. There's a little switch back there that'll put music on, but it's kind of unpredictable as to what it is. So, this can be done. Or if this plan doesn't work for you, try another one. All right, you're up to 600. Take another $100 profit. Put it in your pocket. Take your wife out to dinner. Pay a bill. You got 500 bucks now. You bet 10% a bank. To win only, split 60-40 between two horses. You never deviate. You make the full bet. 10% a bank. And you do that for the rest of your life. Eventually, you'll have to take a profit. But where you do that is more up to you. When your hands start to sweat, when the money that you put through the window is wet, you have reached your psychological limits. Dick Mitchell has the best description of this. He says, when he is at his limit, he can hear the blood going through his ears. You don't want to bet above that, friends. Not only is it bad for your health, Howard had one guy have a stroke in line because he was making too big a bet. Could not handle the pressure. Bonk, down he went. Not only can you not, is it not good for you, it'll ruin your handicapping. It really will. If you get involved in some kind of a bankroll, as I did, where it just grew to the point that it was suddenly uncomfortable, it will ruin your handicapping. It will carry over. So money management has some feedback. There's a feedback. Money management and handicapping are separate fields, but there is a lot of feedback between them. The other thing that you may run up against, those of you at the smaller tracks, is the tote board. At Long Acres, where we're playing, $200 or $300 bet seemed to be about the limit without really impacting the odds. And you had to, I made one largish bet up there, and I fed it in over a period of about 10 minutes because I didn't want to just plunk it down. At some tracks, $50. There was one horse with 5 minutes to go at Long Acres that only had about $125 bet on him. And there's some tracks where with 5 minutes to go, there may be a horse that doesn't have anything bet on him or only $10. So you walk up and put $100 on that sucker. Uh-oh. Look out. Whatever limit you reach, be it psychological or tote board, at this point, you need to do something with that money. Take some profits and then flat bet where you are. If your limit psychologically is $100, then stay there for a while, 6 months. Then maybe creep up on it. Next to $5 a week, dollar a day, add to your bet, you'll find that you can increase it. And as your confidence increases and you look back at your notebook full of winning races, it'll just be sort of natural to say, well, I could bet a little more. You're used to putting $100 down. Suddenly, it doesn't seem like such a stretch to go 120. It'll happen naturally. Don't worry about it. With the tote board, I don't know. There's nothing much you can do but move. Wait, pray for simulcast.